The Laura Murphy Show, Episode 17.
Welcome to The Laura Murphy Show, the podcast that analyzes financial markets from the perspective of Austrian economics and Nelson Nash's infinite banking concept. Listen and learn as your hosts, Robert Murphy and Carlos Lara, explain how you can be part of building the 10%.
Welcome, everybody, to the Laura Murphy Show. I'm your host, Bob Murphy. As always, with me is Carlos. Carlos, how are you doing?
I'm doing very good, Bob. Thank you.
Well, folks, we're going to start a new two-part series. So this is going to be, this episode is 17, and then it's going to carry over into episode 18. And then this two-part series, what we're going to do is tell you, the member of the general public who presumably has a familiarity with Austrian economics and libertarian political views, we're going to tell you why you should be very interested in learning about Nelson Nash's infinite banking concept, abbreviated as IBC, and what you need to know is sort of a crash course and what steps you should take in order to take it to the next level. And so the outline we have for you guys is in this episode, episode 17 of the Laura Murphy Show, we're going to explain what IBC is and then its relationship to Austrian economics, and why I, as an Austrian economist, for example, why I got into it and so on, just to give you that background. And then we're going to tell you what you need to read in order to get up to speed as to how it works and so on. And then we're going to point you to our practitioner finder, the financial professionals who have been through our training program. And in the next episode, though, we're going to say these are the things you should do before you actually go and meet with somebody that you got off of the finder to make sure you've got all your ducks in a row to kind of save time in that initial meeting, make sure there's no misunderstandings, that we're going to equip you and train you and educate you so that initial meeting can be as productive as possible for both parties. And again, everybody's happy with what happens. So that's the scope. That's our plan. We hope you gain a lot from these two episodes. So to begin with, I guess, Carlos, do you want me to turn it over to you and have you take the first crack at explaining to a total newcomer who's like, yeah, I hear that Bob's involved with this IBC stuff. It's about insurance or something. What the heck is that? So somebody who wants to know, what is this IBC all about? Do you want to take a crack at explaining it to the complete novice?
Yes, I can surely take a crack at it. One thing to do for sure, Bob, if we're going to give instructions to folks on how to, you know, do this, we did a couple of episodes, didn't we, on these podcasts? I think they were episode 1 and 2, I think, where we talked about the origins of how you and I, you know, got together. I think it's a good idea if folks will go back and maybe review episode 1 and 2 again. They might get some of that initial background, because there's some information in there that I think is important. IBC is the infinite banking concept. It is a book that Mr. Nelson Nash wrote a book that is entitled Becoming Your Own Banker. So if I were talking to someone that knows nothing about this, I would start out by saying this book shows you how to become your own banker. And that's probably intriguing enough. The book that Mr. Nelson Nash wrote is a booklet, actually. It's only about 90 pages long, if that long. So it's a book that you can read probably at one sitting. But I will guarantee you will wind up reading it probably several times over. And you will wonder at times what it is that you're reading about. Because as Bob says, has said, that it's about life insurance, and yet at the same time is not about life insurance. We think of life insurance as life insurance. We take out an insurance policy on our lives, and we take medicals, and then we have this contract that we basically put in our drawer and forget about it. And of course, then we just pay the bill on the insurance policy when it comes in, or if it gets drawn out of your bank account. So the first thing I would want to say to the novice is that this is really not about life insurance. Yes, we are using a life insurance product. The oldest product that the life insurance, you know, industry has, a dividend paying whole life product, but this is not about life insurance. That's one of the very first things that I would want to make sure that our listeners understand. It's not about life insurance. It's about utilizing a life insurance product for the purposes of becoming your own banker.
Okay, great. Thanks, Carlos. Let me, I'll take the ball. So I want to affirm what Carlos just said, that yes, by all means, if you really want to know more of the background, go to the laramurphy.com, LARA-murphy.com, and go to the podcast section and go to episodes 1 and 2, where we give you more of the history of how Carlos and I met and so on. And along the way, you'll learn more about this background. But for our purposes today, again, as Carlos, what he just said there, Nelson's book is about becoming your own banker. And banking there, what he means is money has to flow, right? And so he's viewing banking in the abstract as a process, just saying that cash has to flow from point A to point B. That's the behind every transaction in a modern economy. There's a flow of money. And so that's what Nelson means by banking. And he's saying that part of the problem to understand how did we get in such a mess economically is that it used to be the case that people had much more control over what Nelson calls the banking function in their lives. And over time, that has been taken away from them. And so that now it's just a matter of course. It's taken for granted that when you want to go buy a car, let alone a house, you're borrowing money from other people and you're going to owe them money for years or even decades. I mean, it's gotten to the point where I went to go buy a new iPhone a couple months ago, and the kid in the store was trying to sell me on one particular financing plan versus another. And I said, can I just give you some money and you give me the phone and I walk out of the store and we're both happy? And he said, no, you can't. I mean, it turned out he was lying, but still the point was he thought it was so obvious that, yeah, of course you got to borrow money to buy a phone and we're going to lend you. You know, it was crazy. So even now people buy phones and they think they got to pay on installment. So Nelson's plan is his strategy, his idea is to say you got to become your own banker. And as Carlos mentioned, it involves the use of a dividend paying whole life insurance policy, or plural, multiple policies as you expand the system. So that right there confuses a lot of people. And they say, what is this? Are you talking about banking or are you talking about life insurance? And what's happening is, and of course, we explain this more fully as you get into it. The way I try to make the distinction is to say banking, the way Nelson uses the term when he's saying become your own banker, banking is a process, whereas a dividend paying whole life insurance policy is merely the platform or the vehicle. It's the way you implement the idea he has in mind. So let me say one other big picture idea here, and then I'll turn it back over to Carlos. What you need to realize, in case you've never stumbled upon this concept before, is that there's different types of life insurance policies. So a term policy is more analogous to what you have with your car insurance or your fire insurance on your house, where you're paying money to the insurance company for a certain term of time, a certain period of time. And if there's a disaster that strikes during that interval, then they agree contractually to make you whole. They're going to send you a check to cover the damages, whether it's your house burning down or you get your car totaled. Or if it's life insurance, if it's what's called a term insurance policy, you're giving them premium dollars annually or whatever it is. And they're saying, if you happen to die during that term, we will send your estate a big check based on what the contract says. But beyond that, there's what's called permanent life insurance, of which whole life is one particular example, the one that Nelson favors and we do as well now. And what that says is you keep paying your premiums, and not only are we going to guarantee that if you die during this limited term that we're going to send you a check, but in fact you're covered through your whole life, hence the name. And so you know you're getting paid eventually, because even if you happen to live, let's say, to 120, that's the way the modern contracts are written, at that point the contract matures, the life insurance contract matures, and the insurance company sends that big check even though you're still alive. So it's, if you want to think about it, it's like a term policy with a very long term, if you want to think of it that way. But it's almost qualitatively different, because now it's not just that you're getting yourself coverage for a limited burst of time, but you're investing, you know, putting dollars into this financial product that accumulates value over time, because you know at some point you're getting paid this big check. You just don't know exactly when. And so the last thing I'll say at this point is, because of the mechanics and how the thing works, the life insurance company is taking in premium payments, and it knows as long as you keep that policy in force, it's going to have to send you a check one way or the other, whether you die or whether you live to be 120. And so they need to be investing those premium dollars in assets in order to be able to meet those future liabilities. And so one of the things they give you the right to do contractually is you are allowed to borrow against your policy using it as collateral. It's what's called a policy loan. And so to put it in other words, one of the things they do, they take in these incoming premium dollars, they could go buy corporate bonds, for example, or they could make loans to policyholders using the guaranteed life insurance contracts those policyholders have in force as the collateral. So ironically, that's the safest possible investment that the life insurance company could make, because it itself is guaranteeing the value of the underlying collateral. So what that means, what Nelson realized, is that, wait a minute, if you're building up value in this life insurance policy and you can borrow against it, so you have access guaranteed contractually to money based on this asset, and so if you have to go buy a car, you have to pay for your daughter's wedding, you have to send your kid to college, whatever, you have these big ticket expenses, instead of you going to outside lenders the way most Americans do, why don't you borrow against your own life insurance policy that you've been funding aggressively over the years, and then you're in a sense borrowing it from your own policy. All right, so I'm skipping some steps and boiling it down to the essence, but that's basically what's going on. And hence, that's the sense in which Nelson is saying, rather than relying on outside lenders who are going to have a stranglehold over you because you've borrowed their money, you're borrowing against something that, you know, you have that asset built up already, and so you have much more control. And in a sense, you've become your own banker. So that's the connection between the process of banking, of cash flow management, and the use of a dividend-paying whole life policy. As Nelson's saying, for various reasons, it makes a lot more sense for you to be paying for these major expenses by first building up or capitalizing a dividend-paying whole life insurance policy. And then when you got to make the purchase, you don't borrow from outsiders. You go to the life insurance company and say, I want to borrow with my life insurance policy as the collateral, as it's contractually guaranteed I have the option of doing. And it just makes a lot more sense to do it that way. So I'll turn it back over to you, Carlos.
Okay. And so what we're leading up to say is that one of the very first things you need to do before you actually go to our practitioner finder so that you can begin talking to a financial professional that's gone through our course is that you should definitely pick up a copy of Mr. Nelson Nash's book, Becoming Your Own Banker, and just read it. Read the book. Take the time and read it. Try to comprehend what's being said there, and you will begin to see that it begins to outline many of the things that Bob just stated. Now, I heard Bob mention the word investing. Now, you're not investing when you do this. Let's just be clear about that. Stay with the title, Becoming Your Own Banker. So Mr. Nash is going to show you now, using a dividend-paying whole life policy, how you will do that. And so in essence, you are going to become the borrower and the banker at the very same time by using the platform of a dividend-paying whole life insurance policy. So think in terms of creating a pool of money, much like you would in a checking account with a commercial bank. Just you're putting money in there every time you deposit your paycheck or your revenue from your business. It's going into a cash flow system, which is the commercial banking system. So what Mr. Nash is now instructing you to do is, why not come up with an alternate cash flow system that'll work a lot more efficiently than that? Okay, and he's saying get into a contract, a private contract arrangement with a mutual life insurance company for one of these dividend-paying whole life policies. And in essence, put as much cash as you can into that system and begin to accumulate your pool of money. As that money is being accumulated, it's going to earn interest, and it's going to pay dividends. And as Bob said, you will then be able to actually borrow that from that pool of money by putting it up as collateral from the life insurance company and purchase the big tickets in life that 9 times out of 10, we don't have, and we usually wind up getting some outside financing organization to help us with that, whether it's credit cards or a bank loan or whatever. So this unique concept, in fact, is so unique and so simple once you realize it that it can get confusing. So you do need to read the book as the first starting place and become familiar with the language Mr. Nash is using here. He's going to talk about the typical problems that we get into in trying to manage our cash. He's going to talk about the different problems that we have as human beings, our inability to save money, procrastination, typical things. Again, he's just writing a book to the general public. He's not writing it to financial professionals or to insurance companies. He's writing it to you, the members of the general public. And he's doing the best he can at trying to explain to you that you can have this banking function back into your own hands and use it. Use it and continue to build more cash value as you use it and as you keep putting more money into it.
Great. Thanks, Carlos. And good catch there. So yes, folks, we should stress here, I may have had a slip of the tongue. It's one of the things that Nelson emphasizes is that, to be clear, he is not saying to the world, hey, everyone, I looked at various possible investments, and you know what? Life insurance is actually pretty good. That's not what he's saying. He's saying use a dividend-paying whole life policy as your warehouse of wealth, as your headquarters for your money, if you will. Stockpile it there, like, because money has to reside somewhere. And here I'm borrowing heavily from Nelson's own terminology to make sure I'm not misrepresenting his views. He's saying money has to reside somewhere. Banking is going to occur regardless of the institutional framework. It's just a question of who's going to be the banker in your life, that sort of thing. And so he's saying, with this approach, why not keep your money in a vehicle or in a place, a reservoir, where you have far more control than what the average American enjoys at this moment, given what the gurus tell them to do. So by no means is Nelson telling you, oh, you're forbidden from buying real estate, or you're not allowed to buy gold or silver if you think big price inflation, or you're not allowed to go and speculate on stocks and what. You can do what you want. What he's saying is, have this be the headquarters. And so if you do want to, you see a parcel of real estate and you think, I know some shopping malls are moving in and this thing's going to take off. That'd be a good investment right now. Okay, great. Well, if you've been following Nelson's recommendations, you have a very handsomely funded dividend paying whole life insurance policy or several that you've got a lot of available cash value associated with. And you can go to the life insurance company, say, I'd like to take out a policy loan, please. They give it to you at a very attractive interest rate, guaranteed, and they don't care what the money is for. That's another aspect that maybe I should just mention. They're not going to ask you questions. They're not going to say, what's your credit score? What's your sources of income? How do we know if you're going to be able to pay us back or not? Well, you can invest in real estate. That's kind of risky. The reason they don't care and they don't ask you all those questions the way they would if you were going to apply for like a home equity loan or something, is that they themselves are guaranteeing the collateral, because it's the life insurance policy they themselves have issued on you. That's the collateral for this policy loan. And also, it's not going to be a hassle for them to get square, right? If the bank has collateral, like on your house for a home equity loan, if you default, they might say, oh, we got the collateral, but then they still have to evict you and sell the house and get the money there. That's a pain. With the life insurance company, ultimately, when you die or surrender the policy, the check that they otherwise would have owed you, they just subtract out the balance of that outstanding policy loan that had been growing at interest. So that's why borrowing money against your life insurance policy is incredibly easy. They don't ask any questions, and there's no danger of, you know, you getting into credit trouble and then they're not giving you a loan anymore. So that's just part of why Nelson's saying this is so much better than what the conventional American does right now when it comes to big ticket purchases. So back to the story, you see that piece of real estate you want. Nelson's not slapping your hand and saying, no, not for you. You can go ahead and buy that if you want, but he's saying, don't go to a commercial bank and borrow the money that way, and then things go south and the banks then got you in a vice. He's saying, go to the life insurance company and do it that way. All right, so that's just one example. So I'm glad, Carlos, you caught me on that. So as far as why don't we spend a few minutes here? Again, episodes 1 and 2 will give you more of the autobiographical background here, but to understand why is it that I, as an Austrian economist, how did I come into this and how did Carlos get me so involved? Well, for one thing, the more I studied IBC, the more sense it made to me. It's actuarially sound and so forth. But the particular relevance, I think, to the Austrians is that when you borrow from a life insurance company, you are not contributing to the inflation problem. Whereas if you go and borrow money from a commercial bank, that's causing inflation, right? That every time a commercial bank makes a loan, they are adding dollars to the system. But a life insurance company does not have the legal ability to do that, right? The life insurance company has to have those assets already in order to lend them to you. Whereas a bank, by the very act of granting a loan, its balance sheet expands. The assets and liabilities expand simultaneously. So it's sort of a wonder, modern fractional reserve banking. When you understand how it works, it's almost like alchemy, but it is what it is. And if you're familiar with certainly the Rothbardian wing of Austrian economics, you know that there's a view that it's fractional reserve banking that ultimately causes the business cycle. So the point is, not only does IBC make sense from an individual household or business owner's perspective for various reasons, only some of which we've covered in this podcast. There's plenty of other things too that we can't get into, but it's also consistent with the broader Austrian message of, hey, the business cycle is caused by banks inflating the money supply, driving down interest rates and then reversing it. That's what causes the familiar boom bust cycle. So when you realize that, you can say, oh, great. So IBC is a way that I can personally minimize my own contributions to this perverse outcome, and I'm protecting myself in the meantime. And it gives me a better incentive to embrace it and then pass it along to my colleagues, my family members, and so on, because it sort of fits naturally. It gives me a reason to talk about the business cycle, but also to give them something practical that they can do so that they stop contributing to the problem and they can partially protect themselves also from these economic storms that are on the horizon. So Carlos, do you want to say anything on that?
Yes, and I guess now what we're leading up to is that there's a second book that you should read, and that is the book that Robert and I wrote, which is called How Privatized Banking Really Works. And it has a subtitle to it, which is called Integrating the Infinite Banking Concept with Austrian Economics. On reading Becoming Your Own Banker, I thought it was such an extraordinary idea that I said to myself, only an Austrian could have possibly have written this book. And of course, it just so happens that Mr. Nash is a student of Austrian economics himself and has been a student of Austrian economics for like 50, 55 plus years. So there's a connection almost automatically to Austrian economics, but it's this whole idea that Bob was referring to, that we started seeing these attributes here that Austrians would easily gravitate to. The whole idea of privatized banking just made a lot of sense. When we start talking about, you know, the idea of converting more and more people into the Austrian way of thinking, obviously, you know, think tanks across the country, you know, they're doing a fabulous job of spreading the message of Austrian economics, and they're teaching a lot of young people, and they've made some tremendous strides. But one of the things that Bob and I saw was that it seemed to be going awfully slow, and we felt that the thing that really has Americans in a real stranglehold is the economic piece, the financial piece. And so we started thinking that what we really needed to do was to, first of all, write a book about becoming your own banker, the infinite banking concept, and begin to tie in the Austrian economics message with that. But then soon after that, we felt it necessary to create a practitioner program, a program for financial professionals where we could teach financial professionals the theory of IBC along with Austrian economics so that they would have a better stance in being able to communicate with the public this very important message, these two very important messages. And since financial professionals are actually the people that are communicating with people about their money, they made the ideal partners, you know, to go hand in hand. And so we're talking right now in this particular podcast of some of the steps that you need to take in order to prepare yourself or actually talking to one of these graduates of our program. So we're saying, number one, make sure you read Becoming Your Own Banker by Mr. Nash. And then second to that, read the book that Bob and I wrote in which we integrate Austrian economics with the infinite banking concept. And you can see some of these principles and these things that we're talking about muting inflation and not being a part of the inflation problem, but being part of the solution.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I know some of you are like, I don't know, guys, that's kind of a lot of homework you're giving me. You want me to go read two books and you're promising me I'm going to like it? I don't know. So why don't you first, when you're done here listening to this podcast, the first thing you do just to see what it is and to get more of a taste, to give you the encouragement, the prodding to go ahead and get those two books, is go to the website that's associated with this podcast, namely laramurphy.com. So it's Murphy.com. So Lara, that's Carlos's last name, Lara-Murphy.com. And there you're going to find everything as a crash course in this stuff, right? But it's not, and there's FAQs, you know, it says, hey, if you're new to Austrian economics and you go through and you read blog posts that are of varying depth to see how far do you want to take this and so on. But that's by no means a substitute for going and reading Nelson Nash's book and then Carlos and my book, How Privatized Banking Really Works. That's really to understand IBC before you... Let me put it this way. Carlos and I would not feel comfortable telling someone to go and try to implement IBC for your business or for your household finances if you haven't read Nelson's book. I mean, it's really... It's not going to take you that long. It's well worth doing just to make sure you understand the philosophy behind it and you see what Nelson was going for. I think, you know, you'll be very glad that you got that. As Carlos also mentioned, we have what's called a practitioner program. And so for the general public, the reason that's relevant is the following. That ultimately, if you get Nelson's book, you read our book, and you're like, yep, I see the light now. I totally want to start doing this myself. It makes a lot of sense. The examples Nelson has given in his book, I've seen how it makes sense for older people who already have a lot of assets. I've seen how it makes sense for younger people. I've seen his example of how a grandparent can buy a small policy for a grandchild so that by the time the kid goes to college, he's already got this nice handy little policy in force that's got a lot of cash value associated with it. Okay, this is great stuff. I want to do that now too. But clearly everybody's different. You've got your unique financial position, your financial goals, the income you have, that sort of thing. And so ultimately you're going to need to talk to somebody who knows all about this and who can make suggestions and say, okay, based on what you're telling me, this is what I think you ought to do, or this is the way we would structure a policy to meet your needs. That's the kind of thing no single book or website's going to answer, that you need to talk to a human being with experience in this sort of thing. And that's what you get from the finder. So that is the financial professionals who go through the practitioner program. They end up, their name, once they graduate, take our written exam, so on, meet our other requirements, they get on our finder for the general public. So the website link there, I mean, there's links from our website, but if you want to go directly to it, it's infinitebanking.org/finder. And if you go there, you will see a map of the United States, and then you click on it where you are, and it lists all of the graduates of our program who reside in that state. And so then you start clicking around, and different personality types are going to appeal to different people, right? So by all means, we encourage people to investigate, call some people up, send initial emails, go to their websites. You know, don't just lock your eyes on the first person on that list. You know, shop around, if you will, see who's a fit for your personality and what your background is. But what we're going to say is, before you go meet that person, even if you've read the books and so on and you're sold, wait till you hear episode 18 of the Laura Murphy Show, because we want to tell you these are the things you need to do before that initial meeting to make sure it's very efficient, to make sure there's no miscommunications, and that we want to prepare you, the member of the general public, so that you know exactly what you want, and there's going to be just a very fruitful relationship just to connect you, because we're training the financial professionals on the one end, and so now we want to equip and educate you, the member of the general public, on the other end, so that when the two of you meet, the fireworks happen and everything's great, just like Nelson envisions in his book. So that's ultimately where we're taking this. And so again, the steps right now, though, are go ahead and go to our website, lauramurphy.com, browse around, learn as much as you can from there. If you want to know more, then we strongly encourage you, go ahead and get Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker, and our book, How Privatized Banking Really Works. Start browsing at the practitioner finder to see who's near you. And then finally, you got to listen to episode 18 before you take that plunge, where Carlos and I will tell you exactly what you need to do before that initial consultation. So, Carlos, do you have any other parting words of wisdom for our listeners?
Well, I would like for the listeners to know that you and I have been extremely careful, very rigorous about setting up the practitioner program for financial professionals. I don't think I'm going to be exaggerating when I tell you this, that as we began to investigate all this for ourselves, we found that there are many people that will catch on to what Mr. Nash is saying in this book and literally put millions of dollars into this idea and are financing all kinds of things for their businesses, investments. You can even pay off debt utilizing this system. So once you catch the idea, you will find that there's all kinds of things that you can do with this amazing concept. Now, at the same time, we found that there's a lot of financial professionals out there that begin to use other life insurance products and saying that you could do the same thing with them things of that nature. So Bob and I have been very careful about our particular practitioners, as they've gone through a very rigorous training program and testing. They've even gone as far as to sign a contract with the practitioner program, which states very clearly that they are not to sell a member of the general public anything but one of these Nelson Nash policies, or a dividend paying whole life policy, or a, a, a privatized banking policy, all these terms that you hear expressed by Robert and I or Mr. Nelson, because if you go on the practitioner finder, you're going to find all walks of financial professionals. You may hit upon a lawyer, an attorney that is using IBC in his practice. You may run into a CPA. You may just run into a life insurance agent or a stockbroker. All of these folks are also using the IBC method, the IBC concept within their own practice. So, but they've all had to go through our program and our training. So these are the individuals you're going to find on this national map from coast to coast and up into Canada. So I just want to make sure our listeners understand that these are the people that know how to design the policies correctly. But you, as one that is becoming interested in this, you know, you should read these two books to prepare yourself. And then, of course, Bob is mentioning, make sure you listen to the next podcast, episode 18.
Well, thanks, Carlos. And yeah, you hit on two good points there. So yes, my apologies for our Canadian listeners and practitioners. I don't mean to exclude you. It's just a habit of speech when we start talking about, you know, the way the typical American does things. So yes, we do have a presence in Canada with people who have been through our program, and many Canadians are being helped by implementing IBC themselves. And the other thing, just to clarify, so this, the practitioner program, it was Carlos and I with Nelson Nash and David Stearns who set that up. So Nelson Nash was intimately involved in the program. And as Carlos says, we scrutinize the people that get in. They have to pass a rigorous exam and so forth to make sure that what we ultimately want is that when somebody reads Nelson's book and says, give me one of these things, we can say with confidence, yep, the people on our finder know how to give you a Nelson Nash policy. We're not saying other people that you might find on the internet or just asking your local insurance person who might say, oh, yeah, I know about that. I can do that. Maybe the guy can. You know, we're not saying he can't, but the point is we can vouch for the people who are on our finder. And that's why, of course, we encourage people to go there so that there's no misunderstandings and you know you're getting the kind of policy that Nelson has in mind that he's talking about in his book. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. Thank you for listening. I encourage you to share this podcast with anyone who might be interested in learning more about the infinite banking concept and its relationship to Austrian economics. As always, we analyze the financial markets here from the perspective of those two schools of thought, and we will see you next time. Thanks for listening, everyone.
You've just finished another episode of the Laura Murphy Show. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues to do your part in building the 10%.
The Laura Murphy Show is provided with the understanding that the staff and contributors of LauraMurphy.com are not herein engaged in rendering legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult your own professional tax, legal, or financial advisor.